Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What the world?
Anne LaGorie is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
It's the only thing.
Well, good morning, and welcome to Talking Golf with Anne LaGorie on this Sunday morning, June 7th. Glad you can join me during this hour of golf talk. And Talking Golf with Anne LaGorie is brought to you by Travelers Insurance. For auto, home, and business, Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Boy, what a week. What a couple months. Yes, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. It sounds simple, but nonetheless, a big answer. Love is the answer. Wasn't that a Todd Rundgren song? Anyway, well, last week I had that interview with Alex Lifeson, the legendary guitarist, co-founder of Rush, and I just want to thank you all for who wrote in on social media, your kind words. The interview got picked up by over 24 publications. I mean, these Rush fan clubs are so loyal, and they truly appreciated Alex's candor and his honesty and his heartfeltness. And it was just, social media was just very active in response to that interview with Alex. So I truly appreciate all your kind words and the fact that the interview was really all over the place. Yesterday, the anniversary of D-Day, June 6, 1944, 156,000 American, British, Canadian forces landed on five beaches along a 50-mile stretch of the French Normandy beaches. And I spoke about this a couple weeks ago, about the military careers of several legends in sports whose careers and lives were interrupted by war, by their heroism, and having the opportunity to tour all of these beaches on the coast of Normandy a couple years ago. What an experience visiting the American cemetery there, learning more about the history of D-Day, and seeing firsthand all the beaches. Utah Beach, Omaha Beach, Gold Beach, Juno Beach, Sword Beach. I saw the terrain with my own eyes of all these beaches and how Omaha Beach had the most hills and bluffs where the enemy had the distinct advantage. And then walking the American cemetery where 9,385 people are buried who perished in the Battle of Normandy. Oh, what a moving experience. And it really made me appreciate more than ever, you know, all the veterans who lost their lives fighting for our country, all the military who risked their lives to protect our country, and all those in the medical profession, all on the front line, all the workers who risk their own health and lives to help others and to protect us during this pandemic. So, wow, what an anniversary yesterday. In golf, the governing bodies all came out with statements about their stance on racial injustice, and I want to review some of those with you this morning. Seth Waugh, you remember Seth, he was on this show a couple weeks ago, the CEO of the PGA of America, he said in his statement that remaining silent is simply unacceptable and was never an option for us, he said, as an association. He wrote, in quote, "Well, I can't ever truly understand what it's like to grow up and live as a person of color in our America. I can listen and can understand that it's hard, really hard, stupidly hard, unfairly hard. I've been told that as a white male, my voice, while not built from relevant life experience, may perhaps resonate in this moment because it carries the weight of a platform and possible change." End quote. Susie Whaley, president of the PGA of America, she said in quotes, "It is my belief that humanity stems from kindness, faith, and hope." She said, "But as I watch the continued injustice against African Americans in our communities, the mass destruction and hopelessness, the frustration and the call for action in cities nationwide to stand for what is just and humane, I understand the power we have as a game and as a group of individuals that will no longer tolerate the racism and bigotry that lives today and has lived in our past." She said, "Our spaces can be used for good, to invite and welcome people from all walks of life and to rise up and say no more. Enough is enough." That was Susie Whaley's statement, president of the PGA of America. The United States Golf Association, they put out a statement. They said, "The USGA is deeply saddened and disturbed by the tragic killing of George Floyd and the racial and social injustice that continue to exist in our country. We will use our voice, our position, and our actions to inspire change within our society. While the game of golf is built on the values of fairness, integrity, and respect toward all individuals, we recognize that our game's history has not always represented the best of these ideals, and at times our own organization has fallen short. The USGA joins the call for open dialogue, understanding, unity, and the courage to envision and build a better world. We commit to being part of the solution moving forward." That was the statement from the USGA. And the PGA Tour released an internal memo on Friday that was sent to players addressing the social unrest. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan said he had conversations with Black friends and colleagues who taught him that sometimes listening and making a commitment to understand are the only things you can offer, and that's okay. He went on to say, in quote, "We might not know exactly what to do right now, but we shouldn't be deterred. We should communicate and learn. We should talk to our family, friends, and colleagues in an open and compassionate way. We should grow as individuals and as an organization. And most importantly, we should demand better." End quote. That was PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan. Harold Varner III, one of the few African Americans on the PGA Tour, he released a statement. Tiger issued a statement on his Twitter last Monday. Tiger's statement says, in quotes, "My heart goes out to George Floyd, his loved ones, and all of us who are hurting right now." Tiger said, in quote, "I have always had the utmost respect for our law enforcement. They train so diligently to understand how, when, and where to use force. This shocking tragedy clearly crossed that line," end quote. All right. Well, some people took exception to Tiger's quote, saying that he should have focused on the issue of racial inequality and injustice more. And if you hear Shannon Sharp on Fox Sports, he was livid with Tiger's statement. And, you know, it's a tough situation to be in. You know, many people in the public eye, under the microscope, like Tiger. I mean, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Tiger's father was in the military. Tiger grew up respecting the military, respecting law enforcement. So, you know, that brings up the question, you know, should personalities like Tiger get on a pedestal and talk about this? Should they use their platform to talk about these issues? I mean, I think from Tiger's perspective, you know, he wants to stay away from controversy. I mean, you know, we're going to talk about all the controversy that, you know, has been in his life. there's been enough. You know, he's living the good life. He earned it. But if you listen to Shannon Sharp, many people think that Tiger is turning his back on the African-American community. Well, this morning at 7:40, we are going to talk with Michael Bamberger, author of The Second Life of Tiger Woods. Tiger's story is certainly one of the greatest comeback stories of all time. And I think Michael Bamberger did a very good job researching every detail of Tiger's life, his fall from grace and his road back to becoming Masters champion yet again. I mean, what a comeback. His game, his body, his life, really all in shambles. And then he manages to get back into the winner's circle. So it's quite the story. And in this book, you know, Michael leaves no stone unturned. He writes in detail about Tiger's visit to Pine Grove in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. It's a rehab center where Tiger checked in after that fire hydrant incident, November 2009, after his wife discovered that he'd been cheating on her big time. He writes about his DUI arrest on Memorial Day in 2017. He writes about the rules disputes that went on in 2013. In four of the 16 tournaments that Tiger played that year, there were disputes, different rules that happened that year in those four tournaments. He also looks at the issue of performance-enhancing drugs. So, I mean, he goes into huge detail about that. You know, was Tiger taking steroids? Talks about his strained relationships with the broadcasters and the golfers who criticize him. So he basically covers everything about Tiger Woods, which makes Tiger's comeback story just even more remarkable when you really hear the detail of, you know, of his life. And, you know, as I said, he's the reigning Masters champion, winner of 15 major titles, winner of 82 titles, tying the record of Sam Snead. He's one of only five guys who has won a career Grand Slam, Tiger. So when you really think about what he came back from, what went through, you know, his mind, perhaps, what was going on and off the course, I mean, you know, what a tumultuous life to overcome. So we'll look at it in detail with Michael Bamberger at about 7:40. And in the first half of the show, I'm sure many of you have booked trips to play golf this season in the UK. And how many of you have always wanted to play over there? Whether it's Ireland, Scotland, England, you know, they have some of the most amazing links courses. Well, John McLaughlin, who's the CEO of Northwest Coast Links Ireland, he's going to join us in a few minutes to talk about how the pandemic has affected golf over there, over the pond, and where you may want to golf when you are planning a future trip. He's actually the golf representative on the Irish Tourism Task Force, so he'll bring us up to date on what's happening in Ireland. All right, a few more news items before we go to the break here. The PGA Tour, as you know, resumes this Thursday. Can't wait. The Charles Schwab Challenge at the Colonial, Fort Worth, Texas. The Golf Channel has coverage Thursday and Friday. CBS Sports will televise it on the weekend. No spectators will be allowed on the premises for this event and really the first four PGA Tour events. The top five players in the world, they are playing this week. You'll see Rory McIlroy, you'll see John Rahm, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, and 16 of the world's top 20 will be there. Tiger will not be there. We don't know when Tiger will return. Perhaps the Memorial Tournament in Columbus, Ohio in mid-July. They just announced that they will allow spectators. So the Memorial will be the first PGA Tour event where spectators will be permitted. Jack Nicklaus's tournament. And we did learn this week from a report in the Augusta Chronicle that Augusta National, the home of the Masters, has made its most expensive real estate purchase to date. They bought 15 acres across the street from Augusta National. It had been the National Hills Shopping Center. And Augusta National spent $26 million for the property. All in all, they've spent around $70 million in the last 3 years just buying up property around the club, everywhere. And sources in Augusta tell me that they may be planning to build a museum and a multimedia center that would be open year-round from across that area where from Augusta National, the acreage that they just bought. So that will be interesting. Anyway, all right, well, coming up, John McLaughlin, the CEO of Northwest Links Ireland, he is going to join us. He'll give us a sense of what's going on over the pond golf-wise and, you know, have you rescheduled your trip yet? If you had a golf trip scheduled there this summer, definitely have to reschedule it. So he will give us some tips on what to do, where to play, and bring us up to date on all things golf on the Emerald Isle. All right, we'll be right back.
At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're giving personal auto insurance customers a 15% credit on their April and May premiums and providing billing relief to all customers affected by COVID-19. It's also why we're pledging $5 million in relief efforts to help our communities. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. To learn more, please visit travelers.com. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Sunday morning, and you're talking golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome, John McLaughlin, head of North and West Coast Links, which markets some of the finest links courses in Ireland and Northern Ireland. And, you know, I've heard from many of my listeners, John, who have told me that they've planned a golf trip to Ireland this year. And then they've asked me, well, what's the latest going on over there and how should we handle our plans? Well, I figured you could share your knowledge on what is happening on the Emerald Isle in the midst of this pandemic. So welcome to the show, John McLaughlin.
Hello, Anne. How are you? Thank you very much for the call to the west of Ireland here. Normally, when we're speaking, we're stateside and we're a little closer together, but we're, I suppose, like everybody else, we're doing business a little differently at the moment. It's challenging. You know, tourism in Ireland, I guess, is really important. But in this health pandemic, I guess that's the most important thing, number one. And there are many consequences of that. And tourism, for sure, and particularly international tourism for this year, is more or less written off, I think. You know, we're going through all of the phases here, like you guys are in the States. Our hotels should be opening up around the 20th of July, and at that stage we'll have to see how the social distancing laws are still. You know, it's 2 meters here at the moment, just over 2 yards. And that's probably going to change back to one in the next few weeks. We have quarantine law here at the moment as well. Anybody flying into Ireland has to go into quarantine for 2 weeks, so that's not ideal for anybody coming on vacation. You know, I suppose until all that changes, we have to bide our time. So we're looking at August, September time. You ask there for ourselves, you know, a lot of our customers are, we've rescheduled them to 2021 and actually some of them into 22 at this point. Unfortunately, that's the situation. But you know what? We're resilient here. You guys are resilient on that side of the pond. When this is over, we'll all get together again.
Absolutely. I can't wait. As you know, Ireland's one of my favorite golf destinations, and I've been an ambassador for Ireland for many, many years. And, I hope you and your family are doing okay despite these crazy times. John, everybody good in your household?
Yeah, we're all fine. I have twin boys. They're 17, so they've been schooling from home since March. Their school just finished up a couple of days ago. So we're doing fine. I'm working from home, as most people are here, still working from home. So there are restrictions on our travel. We're limited to 5 kilometers, which is about 3.5 miles, from our homes. Obviously, if you have to, you know, go further to shop and do that kind of stuff, that's okay. And people that have to work, that's okay too. So those kind of restrictions are due to ease up a little bit on the 8th of June, where the travel distance increases to 20 k's, and then in July, then, you know, that eases up then countrywide, and I suppose that's really the start of our domestic tourism, and we'll see how that goes, depending on social distancing, etc.
So you said you can't go beyond 3.5 miles from your house right now?
Yeah. That's the rule. Now, in fairness, you know, everybody has different circumstances, and depending on what you do for a living. I mean, if you're in the medical profession, obviously there are special dispensations, and construction actually is back. People are working construction again, social distancing, and so some industries are back, like some restaurants. We're still on a takeaway basis only, so there's none of the restaurants and bars are open. So our whole social scene, Anne, has changed. As you can imagine, we're all dying for a pint of Guinness here in Ireland at the moment, and we can't go out and have one yet. But
all that good crack, as they say in Ireland,
right,
you have to do that at home, right? Just have
some
fun at home.
Yeah, we're missing that whole socialization side of things. But it has loosened up a little bit in that, my two lads, for example, they can now have a couple of friends around. I think it's 4 in total. So they go to others' houses, and so it has loosened up a little bit from that perspective. But the weather around here has been unbelievable for the last kind of 7 or 8 weeks, and particularly this weekend, we're up in the high 70s, low 80s, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people sneaking off to the beaches and whatever else. But in fairness, the country has we've done pretty well. We've obeyed by the rules as much as possible, and hopefully that will help us get out the other end quicker.
And plus, you have daylight there until, what, 10 o'clock at night? So the other day I was talking to you, and the kids were still swimming.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It's still bright here until probably 10:30 at night. During the summer, like at this time of the year, I can't get to my golf course yet because it's over 5 k's from my house, but I will be able to do that next week. But we can tee off at 7 in the evening and play 18 holes. It's dark from about 11 p.m. until 4 a.m. That's kind of the darkness during the summertime. During the winter, then it changes.
So you can really, when you go over to Ireland to play golf, so many people play 36 holes a day with no problem and get in the car and drive another 2 hours to their next golf destination. It just makes for an incredible golf trip. But now I know, John, you were named as the golf representative to the Irish Tourism Task Force. Congratulations. That's a true honor because you're the only one from golf. So tell us a little bit about this task force and, you know, what it's like being a part of this group.
Yeah, so this the task force was established about 10 days ago by the government. So there are 14 of us on the task force. As you said, I'm from the golf side of things. There are people from different parts of the tourism industry. And then there are some very interesting people not directly involved in tourism, but people from LinkedIn and Aer Lingus from our airline. So it's a really interesting group, and we've had a couple of meetings. By the end of the summer, we'll have a report to present to the government, and hopefully that will help, put the plan together for tourism for Ireland for 2021, 22, 23. It's an onerous task, but we're all up for it. And, the tourism industry is close-knit here in Ireland, and everybody, we can call on a lot of experience to help put that together and to make sure everybody's interests are taken care of, and we get out of this as quickly and as best we can.
And I know you'll be a big force to, you know, make that happen, because tourism is Ireland's number one industry. I've been going to Ireland for so many years, even when farming was still the number one industry. It sounds like, you know, a long time ago, but tourism has gradually become the number one industry in Ireland. So this pandemic is just crushing the economy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And you know, it's a really important employer here, and we're very lucky, I suppose. We have some government subsidies in at the moment, which are due to finish in July. But for a lot of industries, the word will be that they will have to continue in some shape or form to get people through. I know from us, from a golfing perspective, from an international, we're an international marketing company. We put together itineraries for people to come to Ireland, and we do the whole itinerary. So you know, that business really more or less is done until next, you know, April or the new season. So it's a long time, but at the same time, we have quite a few people putting their bookings in for next year, and some of them into 22 as well. So some of the courses, funnily enough, for next year are getting pretty full already. And that's a good sign, and that's a sign, again, we talked about resilience and resilience of people from your side of the pond. There's a pent-up demand there, I think, for people to travel. And once this thing is over, I hope, you know, tourism will bounce back pretty quickly.
Oh, I'm sure it will, because people can't wait to get there and experience these beautiful courses, both Lynx courses and Parkland courses. And the hospitality of the Irish people, John, is really second to none. Let's go.
Yeah, funny. We had a webinar yesterday. The new way of doing business. So we had 42 U.S. club managers, golf club managers, on a kind of an educational program, I guess. And I went through Ireland, and it's all its attributes, and we had some nice video and images, and you know, a lot of people who hadn't really seen what we have here were gobsmacked, and the amount of emails I got afterwards and people interested in putting together clips for their members. So that's great, you know. But we've a fantastic product, and it's not just golf, you know, culture and heritage, as you know, when you're here, our music, we're famous for that, history, fishing, shooting, scenery, and all sorts of adventure. So it's the people in Ireland, you know, help with that experience, and golf in particular. Everybody plays golf in Ireland, so when you're in the clubhouses, you get to meet all sorts of interesting characters, and caddies are great people and a great asset to us as well. So we're looking forward to getting all of them back in action, and as I said, we're putting together a lot of trips at the moment for next year. So if anybody's interested, it's a good time to get in touch.
That's right. And the website is www.northandwestcoastlinks.com. And so if you obviously had a trip booked for this summer, you can easily rebook it for next year, and John McLaughlin and his team can certainly help you do that. Let's talk about some of the courses that you represent. Ballyliffin, Enniscrone, Carn, Donegal, Port Salon, Castle Rock, Port Stewart. I mean, Carn Bunmullet is located in a very remote part of Western Ireland. It takes a while to get there, but the scenery, John, is stunning. And it's so well worth the trip. It sits on magnificent, unspoiled sand dunes overlooking the bay and the Atlantic Ocean. And it was said to be the last Lynx course to be designed by the late Eddie Hackett, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Eddie Hackett, you know, synonymous with great golf courses in Ireland. And many years ago, I was manager of a course, Connemara, where I met you first, Anne, by the way.
That's right, I remember
Connemara
that.
Golf Club. And Eddie designed that, and then we got him in my time there to do another nine. And you know, I had great fun with him there. He was 85 or 86 at the time, full of energy, full of life, and loved what he did. I mean, and he was what he did, and especially with Carn, you talked about it there. Like, it's got some of the highest sand dunes in Ireland, and Eddie didn't move any earth when he built golf courses. I mean, he basically designed the golf courses through and around and on top of these dunes, And Cairn is a fantastic example of that. And again, one of the golf courses that, you know, would have struggled through this pandemic because they only have, you know, 50 or 60 local members, so they're very reliant on international visitors. Up the coast in Enniscrone, another great track, and again, huge sand dunes. I was just talking to the manager there this evening, and they're very busy with local golfers at the moment, and obviously busy rescheduling people as well from an international perspective. You mentioned Donegal, Port Salon, Ballyliffin, John Farn, whom you know very
well. Sure, at Ballyliffin. Beautiful.
Yeah,
and borders the Atlantic Ocean, has two championship links courses. It hosted the 2018 Irish Open.
During the winter they built another 9 holes. Pat Ruddy, another great Irish designer. So Pat, before the pandemic, they designed and built a 9-hole course there. So they have 2.5 golf courses there now, and that other course will be open during the summer. A very successful hosting of the Irish Open, Dubai Duty-Free Irish Open in 2018. And Port Stewart, then, just across the bay into Northern Ireland, hosted in 2017. And then Royal Port Rush next door, again, an Irish Open course in 2012. And then had the great Open Championship last year, which we all enjoyed so much, and Shane Lowry, one of our own, to win it was fantastic.
That was amazing. I mean, what an Open Championship, right? To have one of your own win the British Open, basically. Shane Lowry, and I know you were there every day, and one of the massive amounts of people who are out there on the final round to cheer your fellow countrymen.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, you know, we've had great tournaments in Ireland, and no matter who's leading, the Irish will get behind them and create a great atmosphere. But with the huge crowd last year, and because, you know, Shane was leading Saturday as well as Sunday, you know, the fun and the crack we had was unbelievable. If you remember the singing, people singing when he was playing the 18th, as he was coming in. But that was Saturday evening and Sunday evening, so it was astonishing times, wasn't it?
Oh, unbelievable. And, you know, the Irish have Padraig Harrington, Darren Clark, and, of course, the top player in the world, Rory McIlroy. You know, for a relatively small country, Ireland produces some incredible golfers. Why do you think that's the case, John?
I think we're punching above our weight from that perspective, all right. and I think, a lot of these golfers, I guess, you know, and I talked about the beautiful weather we have here at the moment, but, you know, during the winter, these guys play in wind and rain they can hone their games in difficult conditions, I guess, from when they were young. So they're very resilient, and you know, they bring a lot to the table. Rory is having a great run. Gray McDowell, another great guy and a great ambassador for Ireland. So these guys have certainly helped us in our marketing and helped put the Irish golf courses on the map. And we'll always speak about the hospitality and the people when they're being interviewed.
Absolutely. Again, my favorite place in the world to golf. John McLaughlin, head of North and West Coast Links. Thank you so much. His website, northandwestcoastlinks.com. Thanks for joining me, and all the best. Stay well, stay safe, and we can't wait to get over to the Emerald Isle.
Thank you, Anne, and thank you to all your listeners, and everybody stay safe, and we'll see you on the other side.
Thanks so much, John. All right, that was John McLaughlin, CEO of Northwest Links Ireland. All right, coming up, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Michael Bamberger wrote a book called The Second Life of Tiger Woods, so we'll get his perspective on Tiger's transformation on and off the course. Just a remarkable comeback. So we're going to talk to Michael Bamberger when we come back.
At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're giving personal auto insurance customers a 15% credit on their April and May premiums and providing billing relief to all customers affected by COVID-19. It's also why we're pledging $5 million in relief efforts to help our communities. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. To learn more, please visit travelers.com. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
Ann Liguori is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining me this morning on Talking Golf. Hope you're okay. Hope you're staying well. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying active, staying peaceful. What is that? Todd Rundgren. I love Todd Rundgren. Love is the answer, right? All right, we are going to shift gears here and talk about a fascinating book. It's called The Second Life of Tiger Woods, and author Michael Bamberger joins us now. Good morning, Michael. Thanks so much for coming on Talking Golf.
Nice to hear your voice, Ann. Whenever I see your name, I always think of you in the back row of the old press building at Augusta National.
And I'm still in the back row.
You were social distancing. You were social distancing before there was a thing, because all the radio people back there would have your own sort of safe cubicle, like Barkley had at the Match 2.
That's right. I know. To get to me, you had to go way up this bunch of stairs, right? We were in the back row. I was always back row left. And ironically, in the new press center at Augusta National, the $60 million new press center, I'm in the same position, back left. But the steps aren't quite that steep.
Are you in West Hampton Beach now?
I was. I'm actually right now. I'm in Florida. My mother is 94, and I help take care of her, so I go back and forth.
I know
you're from Long Island. You grew up in Patchogue, right?
I grew up in Patchogue. Yep. I was just visiting my 92-year-old father yesterday, who lives in New York City.
Oh wow! I hope he's doing okay.
He's doing okay.
Well, I want to talk about, you know, you just did an extraordinary amount of research in writing this book, The Second Life of Tiger Woods. I mean, it must have been difficult, right? Because you basically detailed all the bad stuff that defined Tiger's fall from the top of the game, from the top of being this incredible corporate positive image. And you had to write in detail about this iconic figure's fall from grace. Was it hard to write about all the bad stuff that happened to him? Because has defined our sport all these years.
I think you used a very telling word in the question when you said, you know, he had this corporate image of himself. And it's just what the question implies is what I do, because there's the corporate image. There's a Tiger Woods that they're trying to sell, and that would be true for any number of celebrities in different fields. And then there's the actual human being, and the human being can't be as perfect as corporate life is trying to portray him. So I have a young editor at Simon & Schuster, and early on when we were talking about what the book could be, he said, "What's it like to be Tiger Woods?" And that was sort of the question that that really drove me all through the reporting process. What's it actually like to be this guy? Because, you know, 15 or so years ago, when they would show Tiger Woods driving Buicks, Tiger Woods did not drive Buicks. So, you know, who the person actually is, that's what I'm always trying to do. So is it hard? Yes, it's hard. And Tiger makes it especially hard because he doesn't make himself available. And so you wind up doing a lot of tea leaf reading. But you and I have both been around him a lot for a lot of years. Now I saw him for the first time play, and I think it was 1995 when he was in the U.S. Amateur at Newport. So I've been at this for a while.
Yeah. I mean, as I said in my intro, you left no stone unturned. I mean, you wrote in detail about his visit to Pine Grove in Mississippi, the rehab center where he checked in after that fire hydrant incident. On Thanksgiving in 2009, after, you know, his wife discovered he had been cheating on her big time. You wrote in detail about his DUI arrest on Memorial Day 2017. You wrote in detail about all the rules disputes. And it's interesting because I didn't realize there were that many. 4 in 16 tournaments in 2013, which is just extraordinary. Then you also really got into detail about the whole issue of whether or not Tiger took performance-enhancing drugs, and then on his strained relationships with broadcasters and golfers. I mean, really, you covered every little detail in, you know, a lot of pages in this book.
Well, that's all true. And you know, the life, of course, every life, yours and mine, everybody else's, has ebbs and flows and all sorts of trajectory to it. And I would say from 2008, he won the U.S. Open. 2009, he didn't win the PGA Championship. The end of 2009 is when he ran over that hydrant, and then we know what happened after that. In 2013, he started winning a lot of tournaments again. 2012, he won. But I would say my broad view, if you look at his life, is that really from 2009 right through the DWI Memorial Day of 2017, I would say you're seeing someone who is not showing a lot of psychological health, I guess you could say, even though he's playing some outstanding golf. And along the way, it's hardly a surprise that his body is falling apart. You know, and many holistic type doctors would say, you know, there's a very close connection between where the mind is and where the body is. There's nothing novel about that idea. So right, the things that you're detailing describe not so much really a fall from grace, to borrow your phrase, in how I view it, just the overwhelming pressure that this guy must have felt to beat Jack's record, to be the best, to be a perfect human being, and it's impossible. And then what makes the story so incredible, and when I say the story, I mean the life and times of the actual Tiger Woods, is to go from where he was Memorial Day 2017 to winning a Masters and being, you know, by all accounts, a really healthy person just 2 years later when he wins the Masters in April 2019. That's why this story to me is so compelling. You know, I mean, now this is weird to say, but the only thing that would have been more compelling to me just would have been to see how he would have, if Molinari would have won and he would have finished second by a shot, how he would have handled the disappointment of that would have been, you know, and also an incredibly interesting test of his character, or you know, revealing of his character. But, you know, the win was the win, and it lifted millions of people across the world, because a lot of people have had the ups and downs of Tiger's life with Tiger.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the transformation of Tiger, you know, physically and mentally, is just fascinating. I mean, I remember at the President's Cup at Liberty National, he was, you know, up on the podium, and he basically said for the first time, I think publicly, that he didn't know if he would ever play again, right? And then,
I remember that, yeah.
Within like a month later, after that surgery, after the doctors gave him the okay, then all of a sudden he's out there and you know, starting the comeback on the course.
When was that Liberty National? That was September of
2018. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What have been your own experiences? When would you have first covered Tiger? How far back did it go for you?
I have covered every one of his major championships, the Tiger Slam.
Wow.
I mean, all of them. And so I've seen this transformation with him. I mean, you know, when, and I'm going to ask you now, you're a writer, so you like to ask questions as I like to ask questions. But I mean, now he's humble, he's affable, he's obviously more approachable, he's smiling a lot more. When do you think that started happening, that transformation?
By the way, I would agree with all that. He actually, if you look at the press conferences and just the comments, he actually uses the word gratitude in different forms,
right?
On a fairly regular basis, where he just didn't before. You know, say whatever you want about Tiger Woods, and he's, you know, probably the most remarkable golfer of all time, and the idea of winning a U.S. Open by 15 and a Masters by 12 and all the other extraordinary things he did. Golf had never seen that before. But it wasn't with Jack Nicklaus's humility, and it often was without really a sense of grace, and maybe he didn't think golf needs that or requires that, and maybe he's right, but that was sort of the tradition of the game that he inherited. Well, I feel very much things started to turn around Memorial Day 2017, because as you know, and many of the listeners would know, he had a DWI arrest and was found with 5 prescription drugs in his system. And when that mugshot went out, and the, you know, tens of millions of people across the world would have seen it, including his children, there's no way that he could look at that picture and say there was anyone other than himself responsible for getting himself in that situation. And he couldn't, as the proud, intelligent person that he is, he couldn't possibly want to be that person. He's a person of extraordinary will. My feeling, he's never talked about this, is that he made the decision to turn things around. And I would say in every aspect of his life. And the only cautionary note I would say in all of this is, to borrow a phrase of the 12-step program and or 12-step programs, and he has never said whether he's in one or not, but that literally these roads to recovery in one's life are their paths, and they're one day at a time, and people like to say, oh, Tiger's changed. And my feeling is that Tiger is changing, and will continue to change. And, you know, he's only, what is he now? Is he 45 now? 44 now? So,
yeah, he's 44.
You know, he's halfway into it. There is so much that Tiger Woods can still do, you know, way beyond golf, and enjoy a full, you know, he's going to be a public figure for the rest of his life. You know, even if he goes Hogan on us, he's still going to be a public figure for the rest of his life, and I don't see him doing that anyhow. And, you know, the impact that he can have on the game and on his educational philanthropies that he's so involved in, it's remarkable. So I would say he is, you know, he's on a path that should make the rest of his life an extremely interesting one, even if it doesn't involve competitive golf, which, of course, at some point it won't.
Yeah, the Tiger Woods Foundation doing incredible work. I mean, yeah, the transformation to me, again, I mean, I think it, I agree with you, it happened after that DUI Memorial Day 2017. And, you know, he definitely hit rock bottom, that mugshot. And, you know, I think he learned immediately to appreciate this second chance. He certainly has his second chance. Your book, The Second Life of Tiger Woods, his second chance, he now is so much different than, you know, all those years that I saw covering him. I mean, he's a completely opposite of what he was when he was.
And I would say one of the most moving things is to see him with his kids, and I think that's I would have to guess you can say whatever you want, not you personally, and of course, but one can say whatever one wants about Tita and Earl and how they raised him. The fact is, if you saw them in action at all together, or just read between the lines a little bit, or talked to people who knew them, there was a close, intense, loving relationship that Tiger had with both his parents. And I don't think there's any question at all that he wanted to be a great dad himself. And I think that's got to be a lot of the motivation of what he's doing now, privately and publicly.
Oh, absolutely, the kids. I think he's totally changed for the children. And, you know, obviously he wants to be a good dad. He wants the kids to remember him as a great person, as a great golfer. And winning the Masters last year, the kids were right there. You know, they didn't know Tiger and his, you know, the playing side of Tiger, the champion side of Tiger on the course. But now they're old enough to appreciate that, and they actually saw it in person, and that must have been, I mean, talk about coming full circle, right? That had to be so, so special.
And 11 years is a long, long time between majors. I think that you might know this, and I'm not remembering it immediately. I think, would that be the longest gap between majors for any player?
Oh, yeah.
It is. Okay. So
the last one was 2008 at Torrey Pines. So.
Right. So 11 years. Rory, so you've been at all 15 majors, which is astonishing. I've been at 14 of the 15. Rory McIlroy has never been at a single major that Tiger won. And, you know, Rory's a veteran at this point. You know, he's a young veteran, but he's still, you know, he's a veteran of the game. So for his kids, you can imagine. Now, I think his daughter, Samantha, was maybe an infant, or, you know, a toddler at best when he won that first one. and Charlie, the son, wasn't born yet at all. So yeah, for them to see their father in full, it's great for everybody. And then I happened to be at the Rose Garden a couple of weeks later when he got the Presidential Medal of Freedom bestowed upon him, and his mom was there, and Joe LaCava was there, and his son and daughter was there, and the emotion was just pouring out of him. And you know, there have been a couple moments where Tiger has made remarks without any notes, and two that come to mind right now are at that Rose Garden ceremony, which was really all about gratitude. And then I don't know if you happen to be there, but the Wednesday, the golf writers have a dinner, and you go to that dinner, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I go
on
every
the Wednesday
year
before the tournament.
Yeah,
and
yep.
And I thought the remarks they made that night, where he took, this is of course, you know, 5 days before he wins the 2019 Masters, and he's talking so simply and so directly about where his life is, and actually looking at this, you know, this big empty packed, but this big crowded room, but it's an impersonal kind of cold room is what I was trying to say, and talking, and he knows some of the people, but he doesn't know too many of the people there, but he knows that most of the people there do something to grow the game and show some and celebrate the game as you do with this radio show in some way. And he was showing appreciation for that. And I found that very, very moving. I found the Rose Garden event very moving. And I find everything that he's actually trying to do moving. And trying, I think, is really the key word, because we can all do that. We can all try.
Right. Michael, thank you so much. The book
thank
is
you, Ann,
outstanding.
For having me. Really
the Second
it.
Life of Tiger Woods. Great job.
Thanks
to Michael. Thanks to John McLaughlin. Thanks to Pete Hoffman in the studio, Paul Rosenberg for his help during the week. And Talkin' Golf was brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Stay tuned for Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge. Look forward to talking golf with you next Sunday morning from 7 to 8. Have a great week, everybody.
When you're back driving to and from work, listen in your car to Boomer and Geo, mornings 6 to 10.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.